clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
Rainbows high and deep into the end zone, and it is caught. Caught for a touchdown. A leaping touchdown catch.
Here he goes. He'll be chased, and he is gone. 97 yards. Oh, what a way to start.
Does he get both feet in right here at the end, Jim?
What are they going to roll it? He caught it? Touchdown! He did what?
He runs to the 50. He runs to the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes.
We are seeing another spectacular effort by Marino, who fires. Touchdown!
Oh, that's loose.
Allen steps up.
Jumps over the defenders to pick up the first.
Says a prayer.
Stop it!
Oh, please!
What a catch!
That's insane!
The game's final play is a Wilson lock to the end zone, which is fought for by Tate with Jennings simultaneous. Who has it? Who do they give it to? Touchdown!
Okay, so I told Josh that I am concerned, but I am not worried yet. I think that Josh Allen is about to have a bounce back game to end all bounce back games. I think he's going to go for 300 plus, three total touchdowns, and here's the bold part: zero turnovers. Absolutely zero massive mistakes from Josh Allen. Now, this also means, I'm saying turnovers. So if he fumbles and recovers, which he happens to do a couple times, it's hilarious, doesn't count. Zero.
All right, everybody. I'm going to go to that Monday night football game. And, you know, I'm going to Cleveland. I talked about Nick Chubb. I'm really excited about him this week. He's the guy now. They don't have the secondary, so I know he caught more balls than he is the norm, if you will. I think Nick Chubb is going to go for 160 plus yards and a score against the division rival Pittsburgh Steelers.
You know, the second I heard Nick Chubb, it just was like, oof, a gut punch. Welcome into Simultaneous Catch, folks. I'm Adam Jeffrey Rossi.
I'm Josh Lapping.
Welcome to the All Things NFL show, where we just, you know, we do everything. We do everything on this show.
Do everything.
Might be Simultaneous Catch Love Line at the end. Who knows?
Wow, a little throwback.
Might be my cold read.
A little throwback.
Yeah, man, what a gut punch. I just, and you know, I was kind of tuned into the Panthers game a little bit more, so I didn't actually see the Chubb injury live. You had to text me, and when you texted me, then I jumped over and saw that it had happened.
I wonder if you weren't watching because you were talking about the Panthers game. And I was like,
yeah, because you sent me that. And did you see the injury?
It is gross.
Oh, it's time to be real during the podcast. So
have you watched it?
Yeah. So I went.
I went on
TikTok to look for it. Hold on, be real.
As you know, you can always find it somewhere on the internet. Even though I was.
Yeah.
Everything that I've read is that they didn't show it in the United States. So
yeah,
thank you
so
to
I definitely saw,
friends
if you
world.
Listen to the podcast, or the broadcast, if you will, they say immediately, we're not going to show you this replay.
Yeah.
And Aikman immediately knew. He was like, we're not going to show you this. This is bad. We know it's bad immediately. And so I did find a clip of it, and I saved it because I wasn't sure you saw it.
Yeah,
and
it's a pretty like 90-degree angle.
It's Joe Theismann level bad, right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty horrible, and you know, you hope it's not a career ender, right? But it
right.
could be for a running back who's 27, right?
For a running more so than that. I mean, you obviously don't wish this upon anybody. You don't wish it upon a running back. But you definitely don't wish it upon a running back in a knee that a very extreme injury has already happened.
And I mean, again, we can go so many layers with this, right? You don't wish it for anybody. You don't wish it for a running back. You don't wish it for a running back on a knee that he's already had it. You don't wish it for a player who is as likable as Nick Chubb, too.
Yeah.
Like, again, you don't wish it for anybody. But just going further and further and further and further, he's just the consummate pro, and you hear nothing from players, coaches, media members. There's not a whiff of a bad thing that was been said about Nick Chubb. And it's just heartbreaking, right? And you know, there was a bright spot, of course, because in your friend's fortune, you mentioned they don't have a backup, right? He's the guy, and you know, it was a bright spot was Jerome Ford looked as good as he did, right? But truly, truly devastating for a team that Deshaun Watson looks terrible. So they really need a running back to rely on, and they don't anymore now. And it's they don't have Nick Chubb, right? Who knows what Ford, if Ford can consistently sure. be what he was.
Sure.
That's an argument for another time. But, yeah, it's devastating.
So tell me about the Josh Allen.
Yeah, so Josh Allen ended up going for 274.
It's because they ran the ball so
well.
Yeah,
so he was awesome, right? He was fantastic. He went 31 of 37, 274 and 3, and 0 turnovers, right? So the whole fourth quarter, it was weird. I kept switching back to it, even though that they were it was clearly in hand. Because I was like, "Can we get like one more, just like chunk play?"
It all makes sense
to give me the 300 yards that I need for this. But it was very close. But really, I was just I really believed in the he may. I don't want to say may. There will be another game this year where he has turnovers that we're like, what are you doing? It's just going to happen. It's who he is, right?
Yeah.
But I believe in him to correct the insanely egregious ones that happened in week one, right? Like, he's going to put the ball in harm's way. I mean, even on the Gabe Davis touchdown, he threw it back across his body over the middle. Now, he threw it in a perfect spot for Gabe, and Gabe got it, and it was a touchdown. But he still made a play that people say is a cardinal sin for quarterbacks late over the middle, right? He's still going to make those decisions, but I trust him that more often than not, they're going to be big plays than turnovers. And I just really believed in the turnaround for them.
I want to ask you this question as the devout Buffalo follower that you are. This game, maybe having the turnover-free game, right? I mean, this is only his fourth in the last 20 where there's been no turnovers. So you can maybe be accustomed to one or whatnot. So he doesn't often have total meltdown collapses of four. But you maybe you're accustomed to one, whatever. Why is it, though, that it seems to be in the – and this isn't a knock. Like, really, I'm not – why is it the biggest games, though, that – like, this is, I think, for me, as somebody that watches so much with you, this is the norm for Josh Allen against teams like the Raiders. You're like, yeah, Josh Allen's going
to
do this.
We blow out the teams that we're supposed to win.
Do you feel like he thinks he needs to be the superhero in those games?
Yes. I think that – Josh Allen believes that when he is up against Mahomes, who we've beaten plenty of times in the regular season the last couple of years, but can't beat in the big game in the playoffs, and the Bengals, who crushed us, were on their way to crushing us on that Monday night game before, obviously, the DeMar Hamlin situation,
who then
dominated us in the playoff game, right? I do absolutely believe that Allen thinks I have to go superhuman to win. And to add on to that, or evidence to that, for him to believe it, he had to go superhuman nuclear in the divisional round 2 years ago and still lost, right?
Sure.
So I absolutely believe that in those huge games and in those huge moments, he does believe I need to throw my cape on and be Superman. Dominic Foxworth on Get Up had an amazing analogy for this where he was like, Josh Allen is Superman. Like, he's going to be that for you. He was like, but sometimes you don't need to put the cape on to save the cat out of the tree. He was like, I'm okay with some buildings falling down and some casualties when you're saving the world from an alien invasion. But when you're saving a cat out of the tree, there can't be no casualties. Right. And so that was the analogy he was making to the Zach Wilson Jets. You don't need to be Superman. Right. So I do think that there needs to be times where he doesn't do that. Of course I do. But I do feel that sometimes he's just so hyper competitive, which I believe, and maybe it's, you know, wishful thinking because I'm a fan. I think that his hyper competitive nature is more a pro than a con. Now, it might be a lot closer to even, but I do think that it is more a pro than a con. However, the con does exist that when he is too hyper-competitive, he's unable to slow down and methodically dissect a defense like he did to Oakland this past Sunday, right? What?
Oakland?
Oh no! I gotta do 10 push-ups. Vegas.
Yeah, it's just fascinating because the skill and the talent and the everything you could heap those praises on, it just seems to be, I don't think he ever lacks confidence. It just seems like, I don't know, because he's capable of doing that every single week, always, right?
Yes,
but sometimes he just...
Because it wasn't,
I don't know if it's too confident in, like, I will use the Jets game for, like, is it a lack of confidence to be like, I'm going to put the ball exactly where it needs to be on the crossbody? No,
I think he believed all three of those plays that he was going to make, like the throws were going to be perfect and it was going to be completed.
Okay.
And I mean, Dan Orlovsky said this on a podcast once where he said that when he was with Stafford, they showed a clip and Stafford had completed a pass and Orlovsky, who was the backup, was saying, okay, what did you see here? Because I would never make this throw. And he was like, that's right, because you can't make that throw. I can. So that's a read that I can make and decide, but you can't. I do think that's a little bit of Josh Allen, where he's like, most quarterbacks, when they make that read, they're not going to make this throw because they actually can't do it, and I can. And sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't, and it looks bad. So
sure, okay.
There's the good and the bad. We'll see what happens. We got another really good defense, I feel, that we're coming in on Sunday, the Commanders. So I think it'll be an interesting game to watch on the road. But, yeah, I mean, I believe him to have more good games than bad, but he's going to have his bad games. He's going to have them.
Yeah. Well,
that being said, let's get into some rant, rave, recall. I'm gonna go rave again. I'm starting off positive this year.
Let's go.
I'm going to rave again. I'm gonna rave about the Ravens and Lamar Jackson and their defense. I just think overall, this is the team, and they started hot last year too, but they started hot in a little bit of a different way, I think. And last year we were both on them to go all the way, right? And I really think that even though they've had injuries, which they always seem to do, they're a very deep team. And I think Lamar played, in my opinion, his best game as a pro on Sunday. Now, I know that it's not going to show up in the stat sheet. He went 24 of 33, 237, two touchdowns and no picks. He added 12 carries for 54 rushing yards. The stats aren't gaudy, but if you watch the replay of the game and you watch the highlights, we're talking third downs and 8, third down and 10, 11 plus, where he extends the play and either throws for the first down or runs for it. And they're like crushing game scenarios in which since he desperately needs to get the ball back and they're unable to because Lamar shut it down. I just think he's just insanely good on Sunday. And then to top it all off, this Patrick Queen, Roquan Smith duo is horrifying. And I don't know if you tuned into any or watched any of this, but Roquan Smith took 24% of his snaps either on the line of scrimmage or like directly up on it between the A or B gap. So he was literally in that like position to either rush or make the quarterback afraid of the potential rush for a quarter of the game, a quarter of the snaps. I also shout out to Geno Stone, who had to step in for injuries at safety, who played outstanding. I just think this team is loaded. It's super deep. They, again, and I've said this so many times on the show, took Cincinnati to the brink last year with half their depth chart on injured reserve. And now we're seeing some of them on injured reserve already, but not all of them, right? And, you know, knock on wood, hopefully that doesn't happen. But if this team has any semblance of health heading into the stretch, they're going to be a nightmare for any team to play.
Yeah, I think that is all well and said. And I appreciate that you didn't just talk about the Lamar aspect with this new offensive coordinator in Todd. Monken, right? Is that how you pronounce it? With he seems comfortable spreading the ball out well. It's something that we talked about before the season, that they weren't going to not run. There were plenty of downs, you know, like
he still had 12 carries, right? So he was still involved,
still made
in the run
plays
game
when they needed to. So it's not like that's being eliminated or anything, but the team as a whole, I feel like this is the best unit of the Ravens I've seen in quite a handful of years.
Yeah, Zay Flowers, the rookie, looks great. Obviously, he was my favorite receiver coming in the draft. OBJ, we hope that he's okay. He had to get banged up and leave the game on Sunday, but he had a couple of nice catches. Nelson Aguilar, I remember when he threw that touchdown, I looked over to you and I was like, who's number 15? And they said Nelson Aguilar. I was like, he's still in the league? But he was great. Mark Andrews came back. He caught a touchdown pass. They split carries almost evenly between Justice Hill and Gus Edwards and, of course, Lamar Jackson. I think that trio is good enough for them to sort of succeed So it'll be interesting to watch them going forward, but I was very happy with the Ravens' performance on Sunday.
Well said, well said. I'm going to do a little bit of a rant, I suppose. I'm not going to get too passionate or anything, but I'm going to be...
Why not? We're gonna passionate be, pals.
That's right. Quote our semi-Browns correspondent. Wow.
Wow.
But I'm actually going to talk about the Browns, and I realize we talked about Nick Chubb coming in into the show and how devastating that injury is, and having Cleveland figure everything out right now. It was reported about an hour ago that Kareem Hunt is in the building visiting with the Browns right now, so we'll see. But right now, as difficult as it is to wrap your mind around what that means for Nick Chubb and his career potentially, right? That is not the biggest issue in Cleveland right now. And it is that something we've been talking about for 2 years or a year since it's happened is the $265 million or whatever commitment that they made to Deshaun Watson. And I'm not going to be talking about how he went 50% completion percentage or had turnovers. I don't even care about that right now. I'm caring about having this person that you brought in to be a leader and a stabilizing force of the organization for the first time since '99 when they came back. And we're not seeing it right now. He committed two pretty bad penalties of the face mask and grabbing him. I understand as an offensive player, like the pushing of the face mask, I think back to the Ricky Williams. And I was like, that's so cool. But like then to be like egregious about it, like where you hook him and like you're still doing like this pole thing. He got into the altercation with the referee last night, which the NFL has come out and said that they're not.
Absolutely stunned he wasn't ejected. He pushes the referee.
They've come out and said that it was okay, which I don't understand why they said that. But more so than anything, I don't even say that because I think the things I just said are very true and to talk about and a concern, is that coming out in the presser, he, and we talked about it during everything about when he was reinstated and he never really apologized. He never takes accountability. He went and put part of the blame on the Steelers players for the face mask penalties, which I mean, if you watch in super slow-mo, you're like, oh yeah, like their hands are there on his, but I mean, like, you don't, maybe that keeps you there, but then to do like the pull and everything, like it's just accountability in this individual that you brought in to be the stabilizing leadership. He's not showing it. Right now, I get that there's injuries and everything that they're figuring out, but that's not the biggest concern for me in Cleveland right now.
Yeah, you're nail on the head. I couldn't say it any more accurately than you are. And again, there's so many facets to this, but it's A, you gave up so much, not just monetary-wise, but draft capital-wise to get this guy. And not just those two things. In addition to that, PR-wise, to bring this kind of guy into your locker room, he had to be perfect in terms of play and in terms of being a leader, like you said. And he has been so far on both of those marks, right? It would be something completely different if he was being that leader, even though he wasn't playing like
right. Like I can forgive. So it's still been a long time since he played football. Yeah. I can forgive the 50% completion percentage and a couple pass.
Well, and that's very kind of you because even like, I could, 8 games, right?
Sure, but I could still overlook that being like, oh, you haven't played football in 700 days, but like. But then you have to be.
And on top of it all, this is a guy who we already don't think, based off of allegations and his response to it and all this stuff, we already don't believe his character is that great anyway, right? And so to come out and give further evidence to support that you're immature and don't understand what it means to hold yourself accountable and take responsibility for the mistakes that you make. It's just such an ugly look.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for A, Browns fans, because I have many in my life who I love dearly, and B, the Browns players in that team who are not like that, right? Or not a part of that, right? Like Nick Chubb, who just went down in a like horrifying fashion, right? But like, that's a guy that I want to root for. That's a guy that I want to be on a team that's good and wins games, right? But I didn't want to root for Deshaun to begin with, but I certainly don't want to, like you said, when he's like not even going to be like, yeah, you know what? Regardless of the situation, I can't be doing that, right?
Yeah.
I can't respond to that because guess what? Stuff happens to everybody in every facet, walk of life, career, job, whatever you want to have it. it's all about how you respond to it. How many times do we hear that platitude where you can't handle what happens to you, but you can handle how you respond to it?
Yeah.
And he just never, ever responds with maturity and leadership. And I'm with you on that one. It's terrible. And yeah. I feel bad for Browns fans. And I'm excited for when they bench him and put Dorian Thompson Robinson in, because he's great and I'm excited to watch him play.
Man, I hear you, but that would just be...
I mean, it would be catastrophic, but don't you think it has to happen if he keeps playing this way and they can't win games? It has to happen. Or do you think they're going to be so to their guns that they refuse to do
it? I think for at least this year, okay. They have to say, right. We did this. Like, if he throws 32 picks this year, they're probably be like, maybe we don't next year.
What if they manufacture an injury where they're like, ah, his hamstring, we can't get him in there, and then, you know.
This is not to side with him, but knowing and seeing everything about how he defends himself, I can't believe that he'd be quiet about that.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. Anyway, let's move on from Deshaun Watson. We're getting some news and notes. We'll go to injury updates. I don't think we need to talk too much more about Nick Chubb. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, we got so to talk a little bit about it. Is. I mean, we haven't said if anybody is under a rock. It is a knee injury that has, I believe he had surgery today. He is out for the year.
And with questions about career, right? Because like I said, he's 27 going on 28-year-old running back.
Next year was a contract year.
It was a contract year heading into next year. Bell cow back that's had a lot of tread on the tires, and a bruising type runner who wants to get that contact and get the yards after it. So it's hard, and you know, it's a game that we both love dearly, but nobody likes when you see these things happen. Unfortunately, it is a part of the game. So you feel for him and you send thoughts, prayers.
I will say a lot of people are saying that the hit. It was dirty, or should have been a penalty, or Minka should be suspended. I think it's really easy to look at that slowed down version of what we saw and think that, but I honestly don't think it was dirty. I mean, when you're talked about a bruising running back that's just going to run over you.
Yeah, hindsight is always 20/20. If you look at it now and you look at it in slow-mo, I'm sure Minka Fitzpatrick would say, of course I wouldn't go low knowing that was going to happen. But in that moment, how many times have we seen Nick Chubb, when it looks like he's down, bounce off three guys and score a touchdown, right?
Yeah, and I don't think – obviously you don't want to target people's knees. But, I mean, the way you get a runner like Nick Chubb down is you take him out from under, right?
Yeah, you go on his
legs.
There
are very few guys right? That can match up top.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, that it's hit directly on the knee, like, that's unfortunate.
And you also have to go low enough sometimes, because if you go too high, you hit the helmet, and that's a penalty, right?
So
it's hard.
It was a perfect storm.
Yeah, and nothing's black and white, and people want to try to make it that way to make themselves feel better about things when bad things happen, but the unfortunate truth is that sometimes bad things just happen. So,
you also put a couple... Or one more on here. There was actually a lot of injuries that I think were key injuries this
week. So, I put the two that I thought were the most prevalent, but I also put other so that we can bring up some other ones. The other one's Anthony Richardson. Obviously, Anthony Richardson started off it blazing on Sunday.
He sure did.
Two rushing touchdowns. He looked awesome. And it was on the second one that he got injured where he hit his head. And he actually popped back up and was like played another series. And then, according to head coach Shane Steichen, he reported his own symptoms. And then the doctors looked at him. And did they diagnose him with a concussion, or were they worried about concussion-like symptoms? I can't remember which one it is. But regardless, that was what kept him out the rest of the game. Obviously, he'll go through the protocol this week. Gardner Minshew did come in and play really well, and they still blew out the Texans, right? The Texans kind of made it a game a little bit late, but for the most part, the Colts were in control that entire game. But we'll have to monitor that heading up, because Anthony Richardson, obviously one of the most exciting rookies to come in some time, and was really living up to that after the first week and then the first quarter here on Sunday.
Yeah. Then there's a couple other ones. I know they're being a little vague about it, but the Saquon injury, I think, is worth talking about.
Doesn't seem that he will play on Thursday.
Although Brian Dable's not ruling him out.
Well, I will say, we're lucky that it's a sprain and not a high ankle sprain, right? Because it did look bad. And I will also say, even if whether he plays or not on Thursday, The Thursday placement sucks on the front end, but on the back end, it's great because they go Thursday and they don't play again until Monday. So they have basically a mini extra bye week for him to get a little bit healthier, which they need him in this offense, right? I know that they have Matt Breida, who's just kind of bounced around everywhere. He's a back that we've liked in his career, but he's bounced around really everywhere. He was in Buffalo with Brian Daboll was there, so he knows him and he likes him. But they need Saquon Barkley. He was pivotal as a catalyst in that comeback, even though Daniel Jones was awesome in the second half. So they definitely need him.
Shaq Thompson with the Panthers has a fractured fibula and is going to be out for the rest of the year.
You know, that certainly sucks, but we obviously didn't have high expectations for the Panthers. So again, it sucks, but like,
but I feel like he's a really large part of what makes that defense.
He is, because they really, really slowed down the Saints, right? And, you know, I know that the Saints were kind of held a little bit in check with the Titans as well, who also have a great defense. But in terms of yardage, the Saints still put up yards against the Titans, but the Titans didn't let them score. The Panthers really kind of shut them down a handful of times in that game. I mean, that was a game until late in the fourth quarter when the Saints pulled away. And even the Saints were about to pull away, then there was a turnover. And then, like, so there was a lot in that game for sure. And obviously, I think the Saints aren't as good as everybody thinks that they are. But that's a whole other conversation for another day. But also another injury as well to a defense that, again, I think is really young and good. But now that's two pivotal pieces in J.C. Horn and Shaq Thompson who aren't going
to
be here.
I wasn't even thinking about Horn. Yeah. I didn't. Is that supposed to be long term?
I think it was like week to week. I know that he was definitely out
then
last week.
We have C.J. Gardner-Johnson with Detroit, a big free agent signing. As we were talking about that defense last week, he is feared to have a torn pec. That would be season ending as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is the frustrating thing about the NFL. Which one of those that we just mentioned is to you is the most impactful if they miss long term?
Well, obviously, I don't think we think Saquon's going to be long term. That would be the obvious answer, but I think that will probably be. I would be shocked if he played Thursday, but you know, Daboll says he's a freaky healer. Whoa!
My cat almost just ripped out the cord from the podcast.
I would think CJ, I think Shaq Thompson is a more impact player in a really scary defense, but I think that offense still is going to have a lot of growing pains, so I don't have super high expectations for Carolina. We're on the flip side, we were talking about Detroit. I mean, Detroit has been the dark horse darling for a year, right? So I think that is when we were talking about the transformation of that defense, and I get that they have some good safety still there in Detroit, but I feel like this guy brought a lot of juice and a lot of fire, obviously brought a lot of ski masks. So I think missing him, I think long-term is probably going to be this.
Yeah, because Detroit, we don't think right now, obviously that can change over the course of the season. We don't think that defensively they're going to be on par with really anybody. So they're going to need their guys to make just key plays, big plays when you need them, right? And he's certainly one of those players. So that's definitely something to monitor. Wow, my mic is being crazy.
So I feel like
that's good.
I just thought there were a lot of, I mean, like, you will always see season-ending injuries, right? But I feel like you're like special team player, but I was like, man, these are like impactful players in week two. I feel like we're seeing a lot go down.
Yeah, you know, I don't have much more to add to that other than, like I said, it happens in the sport. And you know, when we do predictions and things like that, we try not to say or try not to do them based off of predicting an injury here or there. But it is what it is, and it happens, and it's sad and it's unfortunate. But hopefully these guys are okay for the long term and they come back and they play great. Any other ones you wanted to cover before we move on?
Not at the moment.
Let's get into a week two in review. First, let's go to your Packers dropping a close one, a 1-point loss on the road in Atlanta to the Falcons, 25-24.
Yeah, it was a fun game to watch. As a Packers fan, or I think anybody watching, maybe not, maybe you were like, okay, cool. It's really frustrating. I mean, nothing about the game, I get it that's a 1-point game, but nothing about the game was good. I mean, the offense didn't have that many points or that many yards. It was, let's see, I'm pulling it up, I had the wrong page on. They had 224 total yards, so they were almost doubled by Atlanta. And then the defense, which I think has so many talented pieces, continue to show a lot of struggle, obviously, when I said Atlanta put up 446 total yards. So there's something that's off. I mean, I personally don't love defensive coordinator Joe Barry. I feel like there's so many great pieces on the Packers defense that just don't seem to click, in my opinion. And then, yeah, I mean, I think we saw a really young team that was down a lot of pieces, down even more pieces after halftime. Before halftime, the oldest player on offense was 27, and then he went down, so got even younger. And I think we saw that.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned defensive coordinator Joe Barry as an issue, and I do think that when fundamentals are in question, it's an issue. Bijan Robinson is phenomenal, right? We get that, and he made so many people miss in that game. But that you could say that it was him, but there were a ton of missed tackles on a ton of other players in that game too. I mean, and Desmond Ridder's an athletic quarterback, but Desmond Ridder made a lot of guys miss when he was just like, I mean, on the 4th and 5 play, like there were two guys that could have tackled him, and he made them both miss for the touchdown at the when they were down by 11 or 12, I think. Early in the fourth quarter, and they were making their comeback.
Yeah.
When fundamentals tackling is in question, I really think that is puts the onus on the defensive coordinator to coach him up and say we need to wrap up, right? Finish tackles. It's lesson number one when playing defense, right? But yeah, I mean the Falcons continue their rushing attack. That's super dangerous. Bijan obviously had the better day with 19 for 124, 6.5 yards a carry. Algier didn't look as good, right? He had 16 for 48. Ridder had 10 for 40 and a touchdown, right? So they really, really used. I'm going to be very interested to see when they add. I'm sure you saw this. The Joker position. Have you seen that?
No.
So they joked with Arthur Smith in the preseason about what position do you envision Cordarrelle Patterson playing? Okay. He was like, well, I call him the Joker card because he's wild, right? And so literally on their depth chart, it says J and it says Cordarrelle Patterson. So we'll see what happens when they add him to the mix and how they use him. But the Falcons offense is, I think, a lot of fun to watch. Some people may not think that because it's a lot of runs, but I think it's a lot of unique run plays. I like how they move guys around and get guys in motion and stuff. And in the first half, I will say this, I was ready to come on the podcast and be like, all right, I don't think Ridder has it, but I think in the second half he really settled down. He made a handful of nice throws. He really used his legs on third downs. I know when a guy is doing something really well, because I could hear, I think I heard you on a 3rd and 5 when he picked it up, where you went like, ah, like audibly, just like you couldn't stop it, right?
Yeah.
When they couldn't stop Bijan from making the miss, they couldn't stop Ridder from just up right up the middle getting that first down.
It was, I will say, the play you're talking about is, I think, really, really intelligent, because they went at Rashawn Gary with a cut, right? So a guy coming off a torn ACL where you're not going to have that wiggle to go and plant your foot to go the other way is it's super intelligent.
Yeah, so that I think this Falcons team is very fun. They'll be featured in Pal's Pixel in a little bit to give you a little preview, so we won't talk on a lot. I think the Packers are going to be okay, though. I really think the injuries definitely, I mean, I think every injury obviously impacts the game, but I think more so than some other teams. There were three very key injuries to this team, right? So I think that, and I don't, I mean, unless I'm reading the tea leaves wrong, I don't think any of them are supposed to be super long term.
Not super long term.
So I think that you'll get your guys back, and I still feel good about this Packers team. Jordan Love took care of the ball for the most part. He still threw three more touchdown passes. The yardage wasn't there, of course. But that'll change when Watson's back, and that'll change when Jones is back, because those are two really big play threats. I think Jaden Reed has looked really great the first couple of weeks. Luke Musgrave, I think they just need to, I think they need to use him more, right? Because I think when they use him, even though his balance is off, it's a joke I made at the weekend, and Josh thought it was silly, but I thought it was funny. So I think they'll be okay.
I think
they'll be okay. Moving to the second game, those Lions that we mentioned a little bit ago falling at home 37-31 to the Seattle Seahawks, making a comeback win after their big heartbreaking loss to the Rams in week one. People were, the sky is falling, the Seahawks are bad, the last year was a fluke. It was one of the bigger overreactions of the week, I think. But Geno Smith shows up, hits Tyler Lockett for the game-winning touchdown in overtime. Yeah, just really happy for Pete Carroll, really happy for Geno. The weirdest Kenneth Walker game ever because he was like less than 1 yard of carry almost and two touchdowns. So
Wasn't that bad.
Maybe like Cam Akers. maybe like Cam Akers will be inactive next week because that's what Cam did the previous week. So I don't know. But really happy for the Seahawks mostly in this one.
Yeah, this was a game of resiliency, right? When you look at, if you just look at stats, pretty much everything's almost split down the middle. So no team really outmuscled either team, which is, I mean, when you have a 37-31, no one's really outmuscling anybody doing anything. But it was a team, or it was a game of resilience, meaning like, you know, like we're down. We need this now. Let's make it happen. This is our shot. We got to do it. And that happened. And I feel like that was really good for the Seahawks to do because, I mean, obviously there were clutch moments last year, right? But you can always be saying like, oh, yeah, that was an outlier. That was a fluke. That was a fluke year. Like you can, any given Sunday happens once for everybody, right? But I feel like to show that they can do this and it's rolling over and they trust their guys and they're growing and trying to be more consistent, I feel like that's really good. To see from the Seahawks squad.
Which team do you feel better about after 2 weeks? I know that between these two? Yeah, I know that the Detroit had the big win over Kansas City, and now they have this tough loss in overtime, and then Seattle dropped it to the Rams, who might be better than we think they are, and then, of course, had this big dramatic win. So which team after this game do you feel better about going forward?
That's a great question. I think right now my snap judgment is to lean towards Seattle because Seattle did this with the injuries to their offensive line, which will come back. We saw really on great bookends last year that aren't in this game, but they were still able to overcome this against a defense that we talked about last week. We were heaping praise on them for the pressure they were putting on Patrick Mahomes. So I feel a little bit better because of getting those pieces back that they were able to do this and can only use this as a springboard to move forward.
I think I agree with that. Speaking of resiliency, how about them Titans? 27-24 at home. Ryan Tannehill goes from one of his worst games of the season, like Josh Allen, to one of his best. 20 of 24, 80% completion percentage, 264, a touchdown, no picks, and a 12-yard rushing touchdown. You know, Justin Herbert did play pretty – so it's weird. I really want to – he played well, 27-41, 300 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. I don't want to say that's bad quarterback play, but what I'm interested in is the conversation about whether or not Justin Herbert might be a sneaky, fraudulent quarterback.
Oh, well, I don't think that's
sneaky.
Fair.
I'm saying sneaky.
Yeah, I still don't think that's fair to say. Remember, your bounce back game of all bounce back games for Josh Allen was this stat line with one more touchdown.
So, more rushing yards too. Listen, here's my thing about Justin Herbert, and this is what I'm mostly interested in, unless you have other things that you want to talk about in this game, is that he's now lost 10 times when he's had a lead in the fourth quarter. Now, I don't want people to think that I'm cherry picking a stat. He's 21-10 when he has a lead in the fourth quarter, but 10 losses after having a lead in the fourth quarter is more than any other quarterback in the last 3 or 4 years by a handful of games. And so what I am concerned about, I know we've talked about how bad the Brandon Staley defense has been at times during this tenure. What I'm concerned about is that why in those moments when you need one play or you need to get into like field goal range, right? Like it was against Miami. Why is he more than other quarterbacks unable to do that if the whole NFL still wants to call him a top five quarterback?
All right, I just need to clarify real quick.
Yeah.
You said 10 losses.
10 losses when leading in the fourth quarter.
So, okay, thank you.
Which is more than any quarterback in the last 3 years.
Sure, but I will say it takes good quarterbacking to have a lead in the fourth quarter. He's not the one out there squandering the leads.
I want to be very, very clear, and this is a very, very thin tightrope to walk. I understand that. I am not by any means saying Justin Herbert's a bad quarterback. I'm just saying a lot of people, football nerds, media members, think that Justin Herbert is top five quarterback in the league. Some have even said 3 or 2. I've seen plenty of people say this.
Sure.
But time and time again, we see him not be able to make a play in a huge moment in a huge game, right?
So,
and I think that that needs to be. I know that quarterbacks aren't really our wins aren't really a quarterback stat, right? It's a team game, but if you say, oh, Justin Herbert didn't get it done in the end, nobody's going to be like, oh, wow. They're going to be like, yeah, I mean, I guess we've seen that.
So I will say, and this depends on your flavor of ice cream, right? Maybe not clutch, if you want to say that. But I don't know if that indicates that he can't be a top five quarterback. I mean, like, you look at these games, like, a lot of quarterbacks aren't going to win when you consistently have to put up 35 points. You know? Like, Herbert puts up, you know, I mean, this is going back to last year. So they lose when the Chiefs 30-27. They lose to the Seahawks when the Seahawks score 37. They almost lose to the Browns when they have to put up 30. The Jags put up 38. Like, this isn't a quarterback.
Yeah, game. I know it's not sustainable. And again, I'm not saying that he's the caveat for this. He's not the linchpin for their losing, if you will. What I am saying is that I believe that at some point, the best quarterbacks, which a lot of people want Justin Herbert to be or consider him to be, they ascend above, right? There are so many times where Mahomes, regardless of what's happening, does it, right? And maybe that's just because he's an echelon above others. But I feel like I've also seen Burrow do that. I feel like I've also seen Josh Allen do that sometimes. I feel like I've seen Dak Prescott do that. Jalen Hurts do that. I really can't tell you the last time I saw and felt it. And maybe I'm not looking for it, right? And maybe somebody who's listening is going to be like, Adam, week three in 2020, he did this, right? And that's fine. That's great. I'd like to see that. But I can't
think of it. I mean, he has done it.
I can't think of it right now off the top of my head.
I mean, there's the example.
I'm not saying he's never done it.
Sure.
But I just feel like more often than not, he's not doing it. I think that's a concern.
Yeah, you could say more often than not, he's not doing it. But I think more often than not, he shouldn't be in the position.
That's fair. Again, this is a tightrope to walk.
I'm confident in saying this. Until the breakup with Staley happens, the Chargers are always going to be right here.
Okay. I feel like that's probably where I land, but after long debate.
Very good.
All right, we can move on. Browns, Steelers. We talked a little bit about the Browns. The Steelers eke out one after having negative 1 yards in the fourth quarter, 26-22. Yeah, I cannot make heads or tails of this. I was texting a friend during the fourth quarter, and I was like, I really don't know what I think about either of these teams right now. I don't understand. I think maybe where I land is that the Browns are worse than we thought that they were, and the Steelers are good because they're coached by Mike Tomlin and they always find a way, right?
Yeah. This was such a fun game until it got bad for a quick second, and then it was pretty good again. Like, there were all the turnovers, and then there was the fumble that was fumbled again, fumbled by the other team recovering. Like, there were so much wacky things going on. It's like, this is so fun. And then, obviously, you know, the elephant in the room. And then, yeah, it was just a pretty good, I mean, I think this was an AFC North kind of battle where they hit really hard and they weren't moving a whole lot. And it was going to come down to who made mistakes, and that was Cleveland in this one.
It is kind of interesting, the sort of the DNA of the divisional matchup, right? Because we talk about how they're always more intense than other games, and for the most part, they are. But for the most part, the AFC North is always this.
It's a gauntlet.
It doesn't make sense to me because, well, I guess in this scenario, it makes sense because it's, well, not so much Cleveland, but like, when it's like Baltimore and Pittsburgh, that makes a lot of sense to me because those head coaches and Harbaugh and Tomlin have been in the league for 10 plus years as the head coaches of those teams. But like Stefanski hasn't been here that long, right? And like, wow, I just completely whiffed. And Taylor hasn't been in the league that long with Cincy as the head coach. So like, I don't understand. And maybe it's really just like when you know the history, for some reason, there's this weird chemistry that happens in your brain that makes you play tougher and harder. But like, no matter what the team is, no matter what the coach is, no matter what the scenario, these teams always have these type of games. And it's a weird thing. It's a really weird thing to me because you would think after all these years, you'd have a handful of games where it's like not like that. But it seems like every time it's this, which is awesome for the sport. But every time it's insane.
Yeah, you can't make this stuff up.
The one thing I will say about this game before we can move on and get to the back half of our episode is I feel like George Pickens really kind of established himself in this game. I know that he had some big plays last year, and I know he's talked a big game in the offseason about thinking he's the best, and you know that's neither here nor there. But I really think he had a handful of plays in this game. I think he only had 3 or 4 catches. But on all of them, it was like, that looks like a star receiver. And how he commanded the target and what he did after the target on some of them, and a couple of them were really nice catches. I really think he kind of said, like, he talked the talk offseason. I think this was a walk the walk type of game for George Pickens.
Okay, I think I take it one step down from where you're at and be like, this is the beginning of establishing.
That's fair. That's probably the semantically the more better way to say it. But all right, were there any other games that you wanted to point out before we move on?
I think that's a pretty good recap. We covered a lot of
good slate. So now it's time for,
oh man, is it Pal's Picks?
Oh yeah, I took it down a notch because you kind of took it down a notch.
I didn't know where we were.
Oh, I'm so sorry,
man. That's okay.
So I don't actually know technically how I did on Pal's Picks, but I know that in Run Your Pool I went 15-1,
which
so
I think means you did pretty well.
I was gonna say, I can't imagine.
Yeah, you were on fire.
I can't imagine I did poorly at Pal's
you
Picks.
Were on
I
fire.
Don't know what happened last week. Yeah. I went into another state of consciousness.
It was great. I will. So you went 3-0. You went 3-0. So you are firmly in the lead. Where you had your Super Saiyan God week, where I had like my Yamcha week. Or Tien, or maybe, I can't remember Tien's sidekick name, Popo or something.
Yeah, I can't remember
the little mime either, guy.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, I had that because wow. I was awful. Where we really were, we were the Vikings and the Chargers, if you were, Will, where you were getting all of the one score games, you were just perfect, and I was just not.
Yeah, I for sure like. 15-1 is
man,
insane.
You crushed it.
But
you know, so I got a hole to dig out of.
I think there were a couple of them that I, you know, knew were a toss up, right? So I got kind of lucky because you have to in this. I will say, I normally do my like $1 pick every game bet every week. I'm really glad I didn't do it last week because can you imagine how upset I would have been if the only one I only got one wrong and I didn't win my 16 team parlay.
I will say is this isn't about Pal's Picks. I'm going to tell you about my sad night of betting last night. Last night was the first time nothing big or serious. I don't ever do like, I'm going to win $2,000.
Sure. It's not fun that way. It's fun when you make little ones just here and there.
So I did one on each game last night, and I got a lot closer on one, which is heartbreaking, than the other. So I went with what I said with my Pal's Picks. Nick Chubb's over was only 82 yards. So I was like, oh, yeah, he's going to do that.
He definitely would have gotten that.
He had 61 yards in 15 minutes.
Yeah, he would have gotten that.
So obviously that busted. The one that was even worse, if you will, taking outside the injury, which is obviously – I had Chris Olave, and I was like, oh, J.C. Horn's out. His over, I think, was 89 yards. And so I was like, oh, yeah, over 89 yards and
didn't
a touchdown.
Didn't he, like, just get over 80? Or he got over the 89 but didn't get the touchdown?
It was, like, 79.
Oh, okay.
But if he hadn't stepped out by that inch at the end of the game, he would have done it. And I was like, ah.
That's the world
exciting,
of sports betting, man. But I do. They're fun. They're fun when you make the little ones because they're not crushing when, you know what I mean, financially, but also heartbreaking wise. But it's fun when you hit on like a $5 bet that wins you $50 or something like that. You know.
All right, let's get into Pal's Picks.
Let's get into Pal's Picks. So you got to give me the games first.
Got to give you the games first. So I'm gonna give you a game that you highlighted a little bit ago. The Desmond Ridder led Falcons heading into Detroit.
Yeah, I still believe in Detroit. I still believe they're good, but I'm riding high on the Falcons here.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I think that...
tell me about how the game goes.
I know that it's on the road, right? But I really think that you can run on this football team, and I think that, especially with their secondary, if Dan Campbell says, you're not going to run, we know that's what you do best, Desmond Ridder beat us. I liked the flashes that we saw last week against the Packers in the second act. But I also, we just talked about C.J. Gardner-Johnson being out. So I think there's space to be had. Drake London had 6 for 67 last week, also got into the end zone. So I really like the progression, like the outline of where it looks like Ritter's heading towards. And I just think it's going to be a little bit too much weapons to cover for Detroit.
Okay. Have the Falcons improved to 3 and 0.
Which, again, I don't even think in my pick like season-long things I had them going 3-0. So I think I had them losing to the Packers typically, but then obviously in the pick-ems last week I didn't. But yeah, so I
got all the right. Falcons on the road. Have the Falcons improving. How about game number 2, Saints at Packers, and tell me why you think the Packers are going to
Yeah, it's a bounce back for the Packers because the Saints suck. I'm just kidding. I know that I think it's fun. That I like when we have things that we disagree on. I think it's A, it's good for the show. B, it's healthy for our friendship to not agree on everything.
Oh,
I think the Packers are really, really good, and I think the Saints are the most fraudulent 2-0 team that we have.
Wow.
I don't even mean that to be like they're terrible, right? Because I don't think they're terrible. Their defense is very good, right? And they have a lot of offensive weapons. I just do not trust Derek Carr. And he made mistakes that against any other team last week, he would have lost, right? And it was only because Bryce Young and that Panthers offense could do nothing every time there was a mistake or a turnover or a drive that was stalled, right? That's the only reason he didn't lose to the Panthers, right? So I think that against the Packers, they're going to be able to force those mistakes, but Jordan Love, Matt LaFleur, and this offense are going to be able to capitalize on them, and I think they bounce back in a big way.
Man, we just need to have a Saints debate. It's not the time, though, in Palestine.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens after this week. I'll put them in the marquee debate for next week.
How about all the things I have prepared might not be relevant next week? How about the last game of the slate, the Patriots going to take on Zach Wilson and the Jets?
The one game I really didn't want to pick. I feel like that's weird to say. So because part of me wants to think, okay, the Jets defense, great. There's no way Mac Jones of all people is going to look great against this defense, right? And then on my other hand, I want to say, the Patriots, there's no way Bill Belichick lets them go to 0-3 against Zach Wilson, right? So really, it's which quarterback isn't going to suck the most. And I landed on Mac Jones on that, so congrats. I don't think you're going to suck the most, okay. And I think the Patriots win. I don't feel good about this literally at all. I think it's going to be a gross game where both quarterbacks look really bad, and it's which defense made the play in the end, and I just think that Bill Belichick won't let them go 0-3. That's really what I'm landing on. I don't know the status of Garrett Wilson, and certainly if he's out, there's truly no way the Jets offense goes anywhere unless they give it to Breece Hall on every play, which obviously there was some drama with that over the weekend, but that's what I landed on. Sorry, Jets fans.
That is fair. That is definitely fair. I don't have any updates on Wilson.
Yeah, that's okay. I know he got banged up, so we'll sort of monitor that going into the week. But regardless whether he plays or not, I still go with the Pats.
All right. Falcons over the Lions, Packers over the Saints, and the Patriots over the Jets.
All right. So I'm going to give you a game that I know who I would pick, and you're going to know as soon as I say it. But I still think it's a hard game to pick, and that's the Browns trying to bounce back after the Monday night loss against the Titans coming off a really huge win against the Chargers.
Yeah, it is. It is a tough game. I'm leaning with the Titans because I feel like you think I hate the Titans when I don't. I never said that. I just said I don't think they're the number 2
seed. No, you hate the Titans. You've been saying it all offseason.
Yeah, I think, obviously, Jerome Ford is a player I really like. I really like Jerome Ford. I really like what he was able to show against Pittsburgh. But let's also not act like Pittsburgh's defense is ferocious, but it hasn't shown a penchant for stopping the run. So let's not be like, oh my God, like where did this come from? They just bottled McCaffrey. Now Ford is going for 100. Like that's not what the situation is, right? So, but the Titans, on the other hand, are really good against the run. They haven't necessarily put their defensive line in terms of pressure and sacks and whatnot. So I could see Watson maybe doing some rollouts and getting going and whatnot. Again, I think the Titans secondary is a little bit weak. But maybe Elijah Moore will not know how to get 2 feet in bounds again for a second consecutive week. I'm going with the Titans on this one is the long thing I'm saying. I just feel like I liked Tannehill's confidence in DeAndre Hopkins in key moments
that
I think could be really important. And I think establishing that to be like, you know what, like we are confident to do this when we need to is really big for that team. So I'm going to go with the Titans on the road.
I really like Jerome Ford too. In fact, I made a trade for him in a dynasty league today.
Ooh.
It was Devonta Smith for a second round pick and Jerome Ford.
Oh, you did do that.
I made the trade.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought about it.
It's a risk.
But I'm weaker in running back than I am a receiver. I still have Christian Watson, Zay Flowers, and Jordan Addison, which are very young, but I still have three really good receivers that I like. And now I have Javonte Williams, Damian Pierce, and Jerome Ford, and I like that a lot.
Okay.
So, all right. Second game, we've got the first elimination game of the season, everybody. So already these teams could be out because there's only ever been two 0-2 teams in the modern era to really make the playoffs after going 0-2. So already they're both 0-2. But if they go 0-3, I'm ready to call it over for one of these teams as the 0-2 Vikings take on the 0-2 Chargers. To me, it's an elimination game.
Yeah, that's fair. I hear you. I don't know if I am that steadfast at the moment. I think especially with the expansion of the week and the expansion of the playoffs, it's probably not the death sentence that it was once upon a time. But I hear you. It's huge. And to dig yourself out of that hole, huge. I'm really excited about this game. I think this might be one of the most fun games of the weekend. I'm going with the home team. I'm going with the Vikings. So here's the thing.
Brandon Staley has to get fired if that happens. I'm just saying it right now.
Here's the thing. Both of these teams, both weeks have been absolutely in their games, right? They've done it in completely different ways. The Vikings have always been there with shooting themselves in the foot and then shooting themselves in the hand and then shooting themselves in the face. The Chargers have been perfect. They've made no mistakes.
Well, offensively. Defensively. But yes.
They've made no mistakes offensively.
Yeah.
One of those things has to change. And I think it's going to be the perfect versus the disaster. So I think Brian Flores is going to dial up just enough to make Herbert make that mistake. And I feel like that will be the tipping point for the Vikings.
Okay. All right. Yes, it is certainly an exciting game to tune into. I'm very intrigued by that game. Last but not least, the Raiders, who had a huge victory over the Broncos and then got blown out by the Bills, now host the Steelers, who got blown out by the 49ers and then won a huge game on Monday night against the Browns.
Yeah, this was my least favorite game to pick that you gave me. I understand it. It makes me a little sad to say this because I feel like our Pittsburgh correspondent's coming in and I think he might watch it with us. I need to see more from the Steelers to feel confident picking them. When your defense outscores your offense, that's really concerning to me. I was worried about the health of Davante Adams, but everything that I'm reading says he's okay. Jacoby Meyer's supposed to be coming back, and I think eventually they have to get Josh Jacobs going. I feel like this could be the defense they do it against. I could also see Najee Harris finally getting going against this defense, but I'm going with the home team and the Raiders for this one.
Okay.
Like I said, I'll probably root with y'all for the Steelers.
Yeah.
But I need to see more.
Right. Like, no,
we can't have the triple popped up interception return for a touchdown. And then I think TJ will. Obviously, he's the number one sack leader in Pittsburgh now. Congratulations.
Good for him,
I think,
man.
He'll continue to be great. But they have Max Crosby on their other side there in Vegas. Yeah.
We need to see Kenny Pickett step up. You see Kenny Pickett
if the Steelers do it and they do it in the, I'll be like, yeah, okay, there's the Pittsburgh, but I just haven't seen that.
Okay, all right, fair enough. So you have the Titans on the road, the Vikings at home, and the Raiders at home. That was Pal's Picks, sponsored by Little Caesars. Did you guys know that you can actually order Little Caesars with toppings and not just get a hot and ready?
We sure didn't.
We genuinely had a moment where all of us were like, I'm sure that you can. But I have never seen it.
Never done it.
Never seen it. And it wasn't bad. It was okay.
It's okay.
I feel like what I decided on Sunday was if I'm getting Little Caesars, it's a hot and ready. If I want toppings, I'm getting any other fast food pizza, basically. So
fair.
All right, let's get to some cold reads. What you got?
Yeah, so I'm going to go to something we talked about a little earlier to tie it all up in a bow. You talked about Anthony Richardson going out with his concussion, and I realize that happened. But he actually didn't technically finish week one either. Do you have any concern about his style of play, which obviously, you know, the Colts already come out and said, like, this guy's going to run the ball, but we need to make sure when he does it, we're eliminating as much as possible risk, or his durability in the NFL.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I mean, it's too early to tell, right, after two games. But, like, the play he got injured on was kind of a freak injury, right? It's the way he landed. It wasn't so much, you know, him being reckless. He was running into the corner of the end zone, and the way he landed, he hit his head, right? I think we can always talk about mobile quarterbacks being at risk for injury. But right now in today's NFL, more often than not, as my cat is freaking out, more often than not, I think that quarterbacks are going to have to be mobile going forward in the NFL, right? Or at least have some semblance of it. So they're going to have to run. Maybe you take a page out of the Tua Tagovailoa handbook and learn how to fall better, right? So you don't get hurt. But I'm not overly concerned about Anthony Richardson. Are you?
I think a little. I think a little bit. I think just, I mean, obviously he's a very special physical specimen, right? But when you've played six quarters of football and you haven't been able to finish in either of the games, I'm like, ooh, I can see some cause for concern. Like you said, it's not like he's standing in and taking hits, or he's engaging in defenders and lowering his shoulder and that's what's hurting. They are a little bit freak injuries, if you will. But I think it's a cause for concern when you invested the fourth overall pick in him.
And I think that it'll be a conversation between Steichen and the quarterback's coach. I actually don't know him off the top of my head. I know he's a name. But I think it's a conversation that
he does have a name.
No, yes, but you know what I meant. He has a name, right? Who are you? No one. That's a Game of Thrones reference. Yeah, so I think it'll be a conversation. I'm not overtly concerned, right? We still have That's to fair. See more from
sure,
it.
Sure, sure,
so.
Sure. And then my last one, this is very simple. I just want a yes or no answer.
Yeah.
Will Joe Burrow play in the Super Bowl rematch?
This Monday night?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
All right, my cold read. So I decided that I'm not going to do Rossi rankings every week, but we're going to do it again this week because I have major shifts in Rossi's rankings after 2 weeks, right?
Okay.
So I think I'll do it whenever there's a huge shift. So I have two teams that dropped out of Rossi's top five from last week. As you see, I put the top five from last week in there.
Ooh, I was going to say this looks like the same
it
list.
It is the same list. So that's I wanted you to see so that you know when it changes.
Gotcha, okay.
Two dropped out, and then everybody else moved positions. So at number five, replacing the Packers, I have, surprise to some, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay.
So here's my thing. I am never, ever going to be worried about Patrick Mahomes. I'm just sorry. He'll figure it out, right? They will. Sky Moore showed some promise this past week. Of course, that's because I didn't play him in fantasy, right?
I didn't know he technically caught a second touchdown that didn't count.
Kadarius Toney came back, and they got him involved again. Like again, he's not a train wreck, right? Travis Kelce came back, caught a touchdown pass. They only scored 17 points, so concern for some. For me, what does that say? They held a really good offensive team, even though Zay Jones and Calvin Ridley both caught touchdowns if the end zone was like 3 inches longer. I think that their defense is young and hungry and awesome with Chris Jones, and that scares me as an AFC team because okay. Their offense, they're going to figure that out. Not worried about it. Patrick Mahomes is their quarterback. But if their defense is this and then Patrick Mahomes figures it out, terrifying. So I have them at five.
You got Kelce with those blank spaces. So.
Yes, it's a nightmare. I'm ready to get in a getaway car and run away from them. So number four, I have the Baltimore Ravens. I talked about them in raving. Yeah. Raving about the Ravens is a pastime that I'll never stop doing because John Harbaugh is one of the best coaches in the NFL, and I have been the Lamar Jackson truther for so long, and I really think he showed us exactly why he deserves his money. Obviously, he's got to stay healthy. Obviously, they can't lose too many people on this team, but if this semblance of this team is available with those young defensive cornerstones in Roquan and Patrick, and Lamar is there with some of these weapons, this team will be there at the end.
Okay.
Falling to number three is the 49ers. I know that they won. I think the Rams are a little bit better than we think that they are, but Brock Purdy was a little bit limited in this game. I went back and I watched some of the highlights. There were like he didn't make the big mistake, which is super important. But he had the Jimmy G game where it's like don't hurt yourself, and it was close in the end because of that. I feel like he was really nervous to take chances against this defense. And again, like I said, he had a clean game. It was like 206 yards and a touchdown and no picks, right? But that's not going to get it done in the end. They're obviously still at number three for me, right? Because their defense is still great.
Okay.
But I don't think they're as good as the number one and two team. The number two team moving up is the Miami Dolphins, right? So we saw them go nuclear offensively in week one. We saw them have a really good offensive game against a really good defensive coach in week two, right? And I think that that is just as impressive as the 466 yards against a fake defensive coach in Brandon Staley in week one, right? So I think going up against Bill Belichick, and I think when you're 5-0 against Bill Belichick, it's you can say you own the Patriots, right? As Tua Tagovailoa refused to say. I love this humility. That's the leader that you need to be to Deshaun Watson. When they were like, 5-0, is it okay to say that you own Bill Belichick? And he was like, the Dolphins are 5-0 against Bill Belichick, right? Not just me, and I thought that was kind of cool. So, and then number one is the Cowboys. Now, here's the thing that I want to say about the Cowboys. I know here's the stat about the Cowboys that's been floated around all week. The stat about the Cowboys is they have 10 sacks and 10 points allowed in their first two games. Dallas has outscored the Jets and Giants a combined 70-10, right? Insanely good. I know it's the Jets and the Giants. I know that. But 70 to 10 against any team. I'm sorry. That's insane.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's just I do not care who you're playing. These are NFL teams. And that cannot be ignored. Now, I am watching very close. They play the Cardinals this week, I think. So it might be even more disgusting, right? I am keeping a close eye when in October they play the 49ers, right? And then they're going to have other matchups against other division opponents like the Eagles and the Commanders, right? I am keeping a close eye on this team going forward. But right now, they've literally played two perfect games, and there is no reason for me to believe right now that I should not have them at number one.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair.
So those are my top five in Rossi's rankings.
Okay. It wasn't really a cold read.
Sorry. Well, the cold read is I say my Rossi's rankings, and now you respond.
You want me to say
you respond
if
cold
I
to what my rankings
agree
were like?
Or disagree
there,
with them?
Yeah. What do you disagree with? Is there a team that I left out that you feel like deserves to still be in there?
I mean, I don't think so. I think, and I will say, just for the sake of conversation, we have about 10 more minutes, and I feel we're in a good spot. Yeah, they have played two perfect games, but as we were watching the game, you were not critical, but you were like, let's really look at the context here. I mean, like, it's an 8-point game. Like, we can't act like we're winning the Super Bowl. And obviously, it didn't end up being an 8-point game. But so tell me a little bit about it. I know you said, like, as the schedule gets a little more difficult, we're going to watch. But tell me what, if any, are limitations of this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we saw it's hard when you win this way to pick it out, right? But, like, we definitely saw that this team is really good when the avalanche happens, right? And it happened 2 weeks in a row, right? But it was we talked about that first drive of the Giants, right? And then there was a turnover, and then it avalanched, right? Now, with the Jets, it was 18-10, right, nearing the end of that first half of that game, right? And then they had that drive where there was the pick six that was dropped by Sauce Gardner. There were a couple penalties on third downs in that drive that, you know, maybe were questionable to some. We can debate that till the cows come home. But again, penalties that extended drives, and then they got it, and then the avalanche started. So what I am interested in monitoring, I'm not saying I don't think they can't do it, but what I want to see is that close game down to the wire, Dak making the clutch plays. That's what I want to see, right?
Sure.
I'm not saying that I don't believe it could happen. Dallas fans that are listening, I'm not saying that, right? What I'm saying is I want to see that. That's what I want to see for me to know that my pick from the NFC to be the NFC champion was right. That's what I want to see.
We'll say the slate gets a lot more difficult for Dallas come October.
Yes, it'll be awesome. There'll be great games. All right, let's get to some Fantasy Corner.
Fantasy.
So we want a very, very – yeah, I feel like you should just do something different every time.
Can't remember what I do.
I really like I like the fact that we had a tight end battle that sort of decided our matchup, and Njoku versus Freiermuth. Freiermuth did nothing, and Njoku was having a pretty decent game, and then he fumbled it, which kind of sealed it for us at the end. But we are now 2-0. And we made a big trade.
We did make a big trade. Still hasn't been approved yet. Commish. Y'all, England.
Stop. Yeah, I don't know what time it is there right now. So
stop having your midnight crumpet. Prove our trade.
They're going to stop listening.
Now, we love you guys so much. And we appreciate y'all listening. Yeah, so we are 2-0 on the season. Close one here. But we're technically, again, we are the – I don't want to say again. That's we haven't done it yet. We are the number one team in the league in terms of, so we've won both our games. We have the highest points for us, which I think is cool. I think what's important about, or something that is validating, is sometimes you see that, right, where they don't have any points scored against them. So they've scored 450 points, but they've only had 175 scored against them. That's not the case that we're going with, which I think shows that we have a well-rounded team to be able to grind out, if you will, the closer ones. I know it's fantasy, so nobody's actually doing that. But yeah, so we talked today about, We're now 2 weeks into the season, so some players aren't living up to necessarily their star billing, and it's panic sell time or sell high when you have really good things or whatnot that you think they might come down with. So we did make a trade today that I think it's really important to say that you and I are never gougers, if you will, where we're not trying to be like, we're going to totally fleece this person and they're not going to know what's coming and we're going to give them trash for gold and whatnot. So we knew that it's technically a risk because Taylor is eligible to come off the PUP list in week four, but we don't know if he'll technically play then. He could wait until the trade deadline to play with his new team. We'll have to see what happens. Regardless, we knew that we had a little bit of embarrassment of riches with running backs, with knowing that that player will hopefully eventually be there, right? So we said we can try packaging our running backs with a player like Jordan Addison, which I know you said we do like, and through 2 weeks he's had two touchdowns, not necessarily a ton of targets or anything. He's not a target monster the way that I think Hockenson and Jefferson are, which makes me feel a little bit okay about cashing in on the touchdowns while we can to move that player. So we have moved Ramondre Stevenson and Jordan Addison. We're receiving Chris Olave and Sam Laporta at tight end to, I think, round out our team, because, like you said, through 2 weeks, our tight ends have done nothing. And I feel like that's a little bit of a detriment.
And Laporta gets the targets, right? That's what really sold it for me, is that he's gotten at least five in the first 2 weeks. He caught, I think he had six last week, yes, right? So he's utilized in this offense. He's the number one tight end target. We'll see what happens as, you know, Jameson Williams comes back and maybe targets start to flow a little bit more to Gibbs and other players. But I like that. And again, Olave is a player we're both very high on. And, you know, regardless of the Saints being terrible, which they are, Olave still gets his, right? So I really like that. Now we have that trio of receivers in Keenan Allen and Chris Olave. And, oh, shoot, I just forgot who the third.
Amon-Ra.
And Amon-Ra.
So
Saint
we're
Brown,
really
right?
going to Detroit.
So, yeah, heavy on Detroit. So,
but they throw a lot.
I like that trio. I still love Ramondre Stevenson. It was really hard. Obviously, the first offer was we wanted to give up Mostert, trying to capitalize on his big game, which Mostert's still going to be great, right? Unless he gets injured, which he has been before. But last year, for the most part, he was pretty healthy and he was pretty great, right?
Yeah.
So we still have him. So I'm so glad that we have him, right? Initially, we wanted to capitalize on him or Javonte Williams in that package to get another receiver. But a couple other people didn't bite. We had a negotiation instead of just one person calling somebody stupid, right? There was a back and forth, and we found a deal that we both liked. So I like that going forward.
Yeah, that is something that I'm going to ask you a question here in a second, but I really just applaud people that when you make a trade offer, you don't have to love it, right? But you don't have to just deny and just never talk again. Like, you're more than welcome to do that if you're just not interested in trading. But have conversations. I mean, like, people aren't calling you idiots when they make you trade offers. That's not what's happening.
People think too often in fantasy that their opinion is fact, and it's all opinion. And none of us really know for sure. So,
Real quick, who is your fantasy player of the week?
I mean, so to talk about two players that the part of the strategy was, now that we're lighter on running back, if you will, or certainly have more volatility because we don't know the status of Jonathan Taylor when and if he comes back. So the part of that plan was, now we're dropping more free agent acquisition budget, for those who don't know what FAB means, on Jerome Ford, Nick Chubb's replacement, and Kyren Williams, the starting running back for the Rams after Akers with a healthy scratch. Mine's going to be Ford this week. I don't think the Browns are going to win this game necessarily, but I think that Ford really showed really good signs last week, and I think that they'll use him even more in the passing game, and he's just a big play threat. So I think that you should use your money on Jerome Ford, if you have it, you should put your top claim in for him. I think he's going to have a really big week coming up here.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. I'm going to go to the Washington game. I get that this wide receiver has been a little inconsistent over the course of things, but I feel like Washington's going to do a really nice job of being sticky with Stephon Diggs. I expect a really nice day from Gabe Davis.
Okay, well, we'll have to have a conversation about flexing him then. I everything that. So he had a great game.
No qualms of doing that.
So. All right, let's get to some friends' fortune. I believe you are first because I went first last week. So I will pull out my timer and then I will start it as soon as the door closes.
Get out. On the clock. Here we go, everybody. I'm going to get on the Friends Fortune win cycle here. I talked about my favorite or most excited about game this weekend being the Vikings and the Chargers. I think Kirk Cousins is going to put up the points that Jefferson can't or that Herbert can't keep up with. I think we're going to see the year's first 40 burger, and Kirk Cousins is going to have his ninth 400-yard passing day against this Chargers defense. And who knows? Maybe Staley will be on his way out after, like Adam said. That's not part of the fortune, but we'll see. Good job.
I like how quiet you were while I was walking back in just looking at me.
I liked a quiet guy.
All right. All right. You ready? All right. So I have no clue what Josh said, and that's why it's fun. And I like that we both calmly walked out instead of running like last time. Although it was fun to hear on the podcast. Okay, 30 seconds. Let's go. All right, here we go. We had a ton of close games last week. And I don't know if anybody saw this, but FanDuel cashed out a ton of bets. That was every game in the 1 o'clock and 4:30 window to every team to score a field goal. I think we're going to go to just the 1 o'clock window, but I think every team in the 1 o'clock window is going to score a touchdown this week. So if that's a bet on FanDuel, I would take it for like $5, though. Don't go crazy with it. That's okay. I actually don't know what it was, but I had just ended and I was kind of like mumbling through the end of it. So, all right. Well, I have a ton of tidbits, but I don't want to extend the episode too long.
Share two tidbits.
Two tidbits. All right. So my one tidbit, Houston wide receiver targets in week 2. Robert Woods, 9. Tank Dell, 10. Nico Collins, 9. Nico Collins has now scored 41.6 PPR points in 2 games. He scored 42.2 PPR points through his first 5 games last year.
Wow.
So he's been awesome, and somebody offered me a trade for him in that same dynasty that I talked about, and I declined it, and I immediately offered it as soon as he scored that touchdown, and it was immediately declined. So that's fantasy comes at you fast, man. I was
going to say, CJ Stroud has done a good job of spreading the ball out. I am shocked, though, that Dalton Schultz has not been involved.
I am, too. Obviously, he's spreading around his targets to his receivers, which is good, right? But I've been impressed with CJ Stroud. We'll see him going forward, but obviously he was my number 3 quarterback in this draft, and he's looked very good. So we'll monitor that as well. My other tidbit that I would like to do, let's go with my team. No, you know what? Let's not go with my team. Let's go with Puka Nacua, right? Okay. So I asked this question to you because I didn't know over the weekend. Puka Nacua has the most receptions, 15, by a rookie in the Super Bowl era in week 2 versus the 49ers. So it's the most receptions ever by a rookie receiver in the Super Bowl era. His 25 receptions through 2 games are the most in a player's first 2 games in NFL history. He's on pace for 212 receptions this year.
Wow.
Dang. Which obviously is crazy. But Puka Nacua, really great. Obviously, you love that he was the number 1 fantasy ad and that he, you know, delivered on it in week 2. So many times in fantasy, that player offers up a dud immediately. So it's nice.
Good for him. Good for him.
Thanks for listening to the show, guys. I have a little run your pool update. I'm winning. Although, our buddy Scott at work is not that far behind me. And there are a couple other people as well. Like, it's only 2 weeks, right? So we're fine. But I feel good about 15-1. So make sure if you're listening, I changed the run your pool this year. If you forget to pick for a week, it will auto pick the favorites so that if you miss a week, you're not out of it. Right, you can come back and pick the games and still be within some semblance of it, right? Because I think the problem last year is we had 3 teams left because they were the only 3 people who didn't forget to make their picks every week or 1 week, you know. So That's not a problem this year. You can still do that.
Well, if you do that, you'll probably do better than I did last
year. I felt bad. I felt bad for you last week. But it's fine. We all have that. I will have a week where I do that or worse.
Oh, yeah.
I promise
you. We have plenty.
It's week two.
We have plenty of time.
Plenty of time. Thanks for listening to the show, guys. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Simultaneous Catch, on Twitter, @SimultCatch. Anything else?
Good time today.
God bless, guys.